It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It's time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. And today we're going into Tinseltown. You know, that place that can be all about glam and glitz and all that good stuff. But every so often it can be one of the most homophobic places in the world. Kind of like, yeah, we don't ask, we don't tell, but we know it's all there. And you kind of do that if you want to keep on working. But those times are changing. And like most of the rest of the world, well, we'll see where the world goes. They keep embracing the LGBTQ community, and it's becoming really second nature, even in a community, in the Hollywood community, where really the LGBTQ community has embraced the Hollywood experience for years and years. And today, to explore some of that, I brought on an actor, artist, voiceover guy who he's just really out and proud about what he does. His name is Paolo Andino, and he's a painter, an actor. As I've said, he's a voiceover artist. And he just is cool with standing out in the glitz and glam of Hollywood and doing his thing and letting his artistic self shine. And he's just fine with it all, even probably when there's been some challenging things along the way. And we'll explore that with Paolo today. So, hey, welcome to the Coming Out Lounge, Paolo. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So I think I kind of summed it up, but you're pretty much, you know, the guy who's like, yeah, I'm gay and here I am. So kind of take me.
Yes.
And if you don't,
ironically, then you started out saying closet busters and closet dwellers.
Uh-huh.
And where the place that I do my voiceovers from is where I'm talking to you from. So the acoustics are good in here because I have all that foam.
Uh-huh.
And it's a closet in my living room.
Yep. Yep. I hear you.
That's I'm back in the closet.
Yes. Well, it's so funny. When I was my book came out back in February, I was doing the audio portion of the book, and I literally went into my walk-in closet, put a blanket over the door, and recorded the entire book in my walk-in closet. It was so funny because we took a couple of pictures and, you know, said, hey, I'm back in the closet. So here we go.
Yes.
But
by choice this time.
By choice. So, yeah, let's kind of talk about that, though. I would assume as a working actor and breaking into the industry and everything, that may have been one of the biggest hurdles is, okay, here you are, a gay man, and how far do you come out as you're starting to break into the industry? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, that I guess I had that concern as much as every gay actor does. But here's the thing, that on the one side, here I am, you know, coming out of grad school and moving to New York and worrying about, you know, do I want to be out? Do I want to be in? How do I want to handle this? While that's going on, my mom has this fantastic job at the Yes Institute, which is a nonprofit in Miami. And they basically work towards the prevention of suicide. Their mission statement started out saying that they were prevent suicide for gay youth, but this sort of branched out to be sort of to ensure healthy development of all youth.
Mm-hmm.
Through education and gender orientation. So when you Google me, one of the first things that it says, mother so proud of her gay son.
So, kind of hard to hide that then.
Take care of it for me.
Yeah. You know? But like, sometimes,
well, I guess I'm not going to worry about whether I'm going to be in the closet or out of the closet because I'm out.
Yeah. But sometimes that can be a good thing. And other times, as we know, guys who, you know, have been in this community, sometimes that kind of outing can be like, quote unquote, literally death itself sometimes, which is when it's really sad.
Yeah. And I never wanted it to be that. You know what? I think that honestly, in my experience, if that's what you're thinking of it, then you have some work to do on yourself.
Yep.
As a gay man in your own road to acceptance.
Yeah.
You know, that goes beyond just your career. And that's a road that I've been on for, since I knew I was gay when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of embraced it and said, you know, this is it. This is the way it's going. I'm happy that I don't have to deal with this. And then I was on a gay comedy show on Logo, and I never got to play, you know, the gay stuff. I never got to play a woman. I was like, hey, I'm on a gay show. I want to, you know,
right.
I always played like you know, sort of like the straight guys. And, you know, in those days, I was the token, you know, meat. So I was.
Oh, let's just admit it. It was like you were the token hunk. In fact, just before we got on to record this, I just had to beef you out a little bit. I got on Facebook and like, yeah, some days my job just really, really sucks. I have to interview these really hot, hunky guys like this one, you know, and today.
But I would say that comes with
part of the sexualization that happens in our own gay community as well, and sometimes not to our benefit. Sometimes don't put all the blame on society the way they look at us as, and I'm going to go the gay man route because here we are two gay men talking about this, the sexualization that happens, but sometimes we do some of this to our own selves and our own community as well, and we don't give room for the beauty of who a person is just because they're a beautiful person, to just let them be a beautiful person, but realize, and you've done so much work, I mean, between the stuff you've done on the People versus OJ and Criminal Minds and you've got quite a list of stuff here that, quote unquote, none of it was really gay. It was just, you're doing your roles, you're doing your thing, and you just happen to be a really good looking guy. And oh, by the way, you also happen to be gay.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just assuming that all the roles that I don't know about that I lost because I'm gay, you know, have gone by the wayside. So the thing is that if there are roles that I lost because I was gay, I never knew about it.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is the stuff that's right for me.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm living a life that is also right for me and full and free and open and honest and happy and joyful. And, you know, so I don't know about the stuff that I don't know about, you know?
Right. Well, you know, you just kind of delivered one of those Oprah moments when she's on Super Soul Sunday and she goes, okay, that's a tweetable. I love what you just said. You're doing the stuff that's right for you and you're living the life that's right for you. I think this is where many of us, as we come into our truth about being gay, bi, or whatever it may be, we struggle with this doing what's right for us, because we've been so used to doing what's right for everyone else.
Right. And I think that as we ask that question, you know, what you have in life is all kinds of contrasting experiences. There's this, there's that. This makes me feel closeted and bad and shut down. This makes me feel good and open. So as we sift through these experiences, hopefully we're making decisions that lead us towards where we want to go. I think what happens sometimes is that we get so caught up in, is this the right move? Is this the right decision? Is this the right direction?
Mm-hmm.
And so then we don't make a move. We don't say, you know, let's go. You know, the other day I was thinking, I mean, you know, I'm a pretty spiritual person and I meditate and I listen to my self-help people, you know, like what my friend used to call the 1295 book. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking the other day as I was, you know, thinking about all my spiritual stuff is like, you know what, just stop thinking so much about, is this really real? Is this the way? Is this the thing to believe, you know, and just commit.
Yes.
And say, this is what I like. This is what works for me. And then just go. Because it's that floundering stage that if we stay in it too long, we're not moving. And it's way more fun to move and make a mistake and get back on the horse and keep moving than to just stand there and go, wait, is this my horse? Is this the right harness? Is this the right, insert all kinds of horse terms that I know nothing about.
Right. Well, I mean, it's interesting that you brought that up, Paula, because when I do these little, you know, the memes like everybody, a lot of people do, and I put them out on Instagram and all these. And the other day I was sitting thinking about, okay, what am I going to write? Because I do them fairly, okay, so now I'm really letting my listeners know how I do all this crap. But I do them like 2 or 3 weeks out in advance. And I was sitting there going, you know, second guessing, because I was second guessing something I always do. And I'm like, second guessing is the greatest obstacle to being anything you want to be. Just do it. You've just got to do it. And that can be really hard. I mean, especially, you know, somebody like you who's been in the business, you know, and going, okay, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to go out for these roles. I'm going to see if I can fit and all that. But I think that second guessing piece is so, it's just such a big piece of crap that we humans.
I agree. But here's the thing about the second guessing. The second guessing is necessary. Because the second guessing is the thing that lets you know what you don't want. You know, it's the thing that sort of lets you compare and really, we live in a relative world. Everything is by comparison, right?
Yep.
Thin, fat, tall, short. We live in a comparison. But I think the trick is not to be upset that the second guessing is there, is to be able to second guessing, or any negative experience really, to me, is more like bumper cars. You bump and you go. And that's the fun part, you know?
Right.
It's where you go after you bump. You know, if you bump and you stay there, just like bumper cars, you're like, oh, I'm not going anywhere. This sucks. Mm-hmm. I don't like it anymore, you know?
Right.
But that's kind of where I'm trying to go in my thinking lately, is not be so upset that I'm having that moment of negative thinking mm-hmm. or second guessing, but just saying, you know what? This is something that's helping me to decide and decipher what I want.
Well, it helps us sort and sift. Is one of the things I like.
Because what happened after you second-guessed yourself? You decided on something and did it work out well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I moved forward.
The thing you wanted, right?
Yeah. It's so interesting. If we really dial into our soul, to that soul center, and we allow that intuition to thrive, it always does us right. I've never had my intuition serve me wrong. Never. Never, never, ever.
Absolutely.
So you talked a little bit.
Intuition is the divine part of us, you know.
And as what you just said, it's that divine part of us. You brought up that piece of you're a very spiritual guy. So what brought you to that space where you really started to dive into that spirituality?
You know, I think it was, well, partly the blessing of being born gay and having to ask big questions at 11 years old.
Yeah,
you know, where other kids are worried about, you know, what color ball they want, you know, basically, you know, I'm thinking, why am I rejected? Why don't I fit in? Why can't I express my like and like everybody else?
Yeah.
And I was, you know, when I found out I was gay, I was going to a all boy Catholic high school in Miami with in a Latin community. So you can imagine it was like pile on the stress.
Yeah.
Factors. And that's where I was. And I'm a very sort of extroverted, happy kind of guy. And I just became this completely introverted, fearful person. I was 11.
Wow.
I often think of my sisters. My sister has a boy and he's 18 now. But I remember when he was 11 years old. And I remember telling my sister, look at him now. And what do you know about him? He's a boy. He's a kid. He's like a baby, basically still a child, you know, 11. You're not even into adolescence yet. And I said, that's when this heavy, heavy weight of you're gay in Miami, in, you know, Cuban Miami, fell upon me. So I think it was asking those questions of what's really real, what's really important, what makes a person, where is self-worth come from? Those were questions that I was asking from very early on, and I think that that's what developed my more spiritual side, even though I did a lot of damage to myself because, I didn't have any kind of guidance or anybody telling me that it was okay or anybody telling me, you know, which way to go or anything. It was fight or flight and survival 100% of the time, and, you know, I chose to hide it and cover it up and and tell myself all kinds of horrible things.
As a point of reference for our listeners, you were 11 years old. What time frame was this? Was it in the late 80s or 90s? Where, what?
In the 80s, yeah.
Okay.
In the
80s. Yeah. It was definitely a different world. I was kind of going through that in a different way. I was about 10 years ahead of you in the journey, and I'd already gotten married, and I was hiding who I was, but I fought all of that stuff like in the early 80s. I mean, I was literally in, you know, 80 through 84, really fighting my truth and finally succumbing to, this is just a phase. This is, you know, all this sort of stuff. But it was definitely that time frame where being out and saying that you were gay was, it was just a travesty. And then on top of it, we had the AIDS epidemic, you know, in full flare and all this other stuff. So,
but and it still is a travesty for a lot of people. You
know,
kids are still, I think the statistics are still that, you know, 50% of kids are thrown out of their houses when they come out. And the suicide rate, gay teens still have like a third of the pie of all the people who kill themselves.
Yes.
A third of them are because of coming out issues.
Well, my husband actually works for the county of Riverside here in Southern California, and he actually works in the homeless division. And one of the toughest segments to put a number on, and I actually used to sit on the board of directors for an at-risk youth home, but the toughest statistic to get the fingers on is the youth. We know to some degree, but because youth are so transient and they can find ways to couch surf, which is different than the bulk of the homeless population. If you're a youth, you can kind of jump from, you know, friends' homes to couches to whatever. So to really put a finger on the homeless real number is really difficult. And I know when I was working in that realm, our statistics between 60 to 70% of all homeless youth were LGBTQ. And that's only what we could put our fingers on. My gut feeling is that it's probably anywhere from 5 to 10% higher than what we know, just because kids can get around pretty easily, you know, and kind of stay stay off the streets, so to speak. So you talked about you going into this introversion place, you know, throughout that time frame. And I'm just curious, does that introvert still serve you? Because it seems to me that I know there's an introverted piece of me that when I'm at some of my toughest challenges, I go very introspective. I'm not sure it would be an introvert, but in a way it is, because I kind of go into my space and I don't let, you know, people in, and I'm not as out and big on stage and everything. In fact, I won't go on a stage if I'm feeling like I'm in my introvert. I just won't. Do it. I've got to go do something to get myself out of that space.
Yeah. So, for me, I think it's both. I think it's the part of me that makes me think too much, that gets down on myself, that's too critical. And then it's also the part of me that when I'm activating it positive way, it's where all the creativity comes from and where all the ideas come. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how I'm able to enjoy life even when I'm alone. And enjoy my own company and create, you know, for me, you know, I have a very creative existence with my work and painting and, you know, everything I do is very creative. So, you know, as an artist, you have to spend a lot of time alone and you have to allow these ideas to, you know, bubble up, and you have to like your own company.
So I'm curious about this, because the work that I do, not only with people coming out, and then I do a lot of work with gay men, you know, going through life, getting through those spaces, you know, a lot of gay men in their late 30s, 40s, up into their 50s, who are kind of like hitting that wall of, okay, I've been living my, quote, gay life, having the fun and all these things, I'm trying to figure out what's next. Or even my entrepreneurs who are just like, okay, I'm ready to, like, step out of corporate America and move on. But I'm curious, how did you finally come to this space where you just really began to embrace that being alone and being with yourself? Because I think this is key to everybody's journey, is when you can do that, it makes so much other stuff more easy to navigate. But if you don't learn how to be with yourself and be alone, you're just going to keep tripping.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I realized is that I used to always think as a teenager, I used to look at like some of the other friends I had who were straight, and it's like, oh, you know, you fix that problem with that girl and you're great. You fix that problem, you know, with your weight and you're fine. I can never get rid of this gay thing. And so for me, like, being gay was the worst thing possible, worst thing possible. You know, I said that so many times to myself that I believed it as a fact. And then as I got older and continued, because I mean, it's a continual process, the learning and the growing, right? And so as I continued to ask questions and go deeper in my own understanding of who I am, and for the purpose of making my life the best it can be, right?
Yep.
I realized, you know, my brother's one of my closest friends, and we shared a room. He's straight. We shared a room for 18 years. Same parents, same schools. We're only a couple of years apart. Had this basically same experiences.
Sure.
And he's straight. And so, you know, I always thought, oh, you know, I have these self-worth issues because of my homosexuality. And then, you know, I talked to him and he's like, I have the same issues. And then I talked to another girlfriend of mine who's straight, and she's like, I have the same issues too. So what I realized is everybody has this issue with self-worth.
Yes.
Everybody has this issue with deservability and self-acceptance. So what I realize that it's not a gay thing, it's a people thing. Mm-hmm. And mine is just called gay, or my road is gay. Somebody else could be, you know, being a woman, with being black, with being overweight, with being whatever.
Yeah.
You name it, whatever the thing you think is impeding you or has impeded you or is in your way from happiness, or that thing that you do all the time, like, you know, that stops you from making the good decision, or that place you get stuck second guessing yourself. That's, you know, that's sort of your thing.
Yes.
And mine was the gay thing.
Yeah. And it's so interesting in human nature that we think our thing is the thing. It's the thing. And nobody experiences this. In reality, I did a lot of work in the past couple of years around, you know, helping people uncover this self-esteem stuff. And what is it that makes you unique? And I'm a big proponent of, you know, your uniqueness is your thing. It's the thing that you need to grab onto. And as I was doing that work, there's a beautiful scientific study that talks about our DNA. And there's a little bit of discrepancy on, you know, what the exact number is. But basically, 99% of who we are is exactly the same. It's that 1% that makes us unique. So, yes, our gayness may be that thing that's part of our uniqueness, but it's also your ability to be an actor and to be a voiceover artist and to be a painter. And those are all the things that are wrapped up in that 1%.
Yeah.
But 99% of everything else, you're experiencing just like everybody else. But we think, oh my God, we're the only ones. And when I get the opportunity to be on stage and speak about this, it's like, let's just be real about this. My coming out journey is all about being ashamed, being afraid, fearful of what people are going to think. Maybe I'm not going to be liked anymore, that my life's going to completely change. But okay, now everybody just heard me say that. That's what my coming out journey was all about. But how many of you here in the audience, raise your hands, want to leave your job, but you're afraid of what people are going to think. You're afraid you may fail. You're afraid to, guess what? You have your freaking closet and it's the same damn thing that I have. We are all more alike than we are different. And I think it's just such an interesting
space.
And,
you know, as human beings, we like to be with people that are the same, you know, birds of a feather flock together. You know what I mean? It's like, if I'm out and about and I meet somebody who's Cuban, I'm like, oh my God.
Exactly.
You know, even if they're from Miami, I freak out, you know, it's just like, oh my God, my brother, you know, and I treat this person like they're a cousin or something. But I think that we also, and then, you know, like, I feel like when we're in high school or in junior high, we go through that period where we don't want to be unique. We don't want to stand out. We want to be just like everybody else. I want to have the same shoes, the same haircut, the same everything, because I want to fit in, you know? And then you sort of start to learn to develop a sense of self, and you start to see that in that lovely, I like people who are like me, I also have a lot of things that are unique to me, which I love to express. That's just something that is not taught to us.
No.
You know, I wish there was a class for, you know, living or self-discovery, because we learn so many things in school and we don't learn this. That's why I think that, and I've often thought about this, and I, you know, I think like maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I wanted to open like a, I wanted to do a camp for kids, because I think that with theater, a theater camp, because in theater, you can teach a lot about, you know, when you're playing a role, the first thing that you go for is what makes this person different? What's the idiosyncratic quirk that makes them funny or interesting or charming or ugly, or, you know, depending on the character you're playing. But in theater, you embrace those things, you know, because you're sort of excavating these characteristics in the character. And it's something that you can teach a 5-year-old and something that you can teach an 18-year-old.
Absolutely.
That thing of loving the thing that makes them different, you know, and if they have a limp, then it's, you know, you work that limp and now you've got a character, you know, and nobody's going to be afraid to do that because they're playing a role. And I think, you know, the same way that in sports you transfer that kind of team building, working together and problem solving, in theater you get that same kind of thing, but it affects you on a more personal level, you know. And I think that had my camp gone through, I could have helped a lot of people accept themselves and sort of love the thing about themselves.
I've always felt like the best course that could ever be implemented in junior high or high school
maybe even in college, but I think the earlier it would be brought in, the better it would be.
Yeah.
Would be self-expression 101. How to be fully yourself. Because there's so much in that, you know, and as you were talking about these quirky little things, it's interesting because I have part of my brand. I have this phrase that it's make your quirk work. And it's part of one of the speeches I do. And when I talk about making your quirk work, I talk about something as simple as somebody who's like, well, I'm an actor. Well, there you go. You made that quirk work. If you're a painter, well, you made that quirk work because somewhere somebody said, oh, you shouldn't do that. You can't make money doing that. You can't be that, you know. Oh, that's just a hobby, blah, 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 you know. And it's so it's so interesting. So,
and I think it just comes down to, like, I like me. I like what I think. I like my opinion. There used to be a Far Side cartoon that I loved, which was just the whole frame was packed with penguin. And they all exactly like. And then just a little word bubble that one of them, you didn't know which one, was just screaming, I gotta be me.
Right.
I heard it in a song.
Right, of course. But, well, of course, that's all of us gay man hair, everything in show tunes. So anytime anybody says anything, I'm like, well, how can I put that to music? You know? So I'm curious too. You have this beautiful, so you're an actor, you do voiceover work, and you also have this really beautiful other talent of these paintings. And I went on to your website and was looking at those. So is that something that's been part of this journey all along, or is that something that's just kicked in over the last, you know, few years for you?
It kicked in for the last few years. About 6 years ago, I did a painting for my ex, which is on there. I don't know if you saw the matte portrait. So that was the first thing I did. And it was a 6 foot by 4 foot portrait of his face from forehead to chin. So it was a really big picture of his face. I did a sketch of the eye first just to see if I could do it. And then I thought, oh, I'm just gonna, should I, you know, do a little one first? And I was like, nah, just go for it. Because it was like investing in these four huge boards and nailing them together and, you know, and working on this huge thing. And I just went for it. And I was painting this portrait, and there were times when I just would step back and just think, like, am I doing this? Is this coming out of me? Like, I didn't know I could do it.
Right.
And so when I moved out here to LA, that was something that I really wanted to explore more. And, you know, just where I was in my life was a place of real opening up, because that relationship ended. And, you know, moving after 13 years in New York, moving across the country, completely different state, and basically starting over, there was so much rebirth at that time that I really kind of latched onto the painting and just wanted that to be part of this new stage in my life. And I started painting, and, you know, now I've had like a couple of shows, and I do it as much as I can. And the nice thing about it is that when, you know, when there's not a lot of auditions or things are slow, I can always paint.
Sure.
So it's a nice, you know, other creative outlet.
Well, yeah. And the stuff, I mean, we're going to have the link on the show page to the website, because it's just, it's such unique. I love the smoking cock one was one of my favorites. I was just like, oh, that's just, it made me laugh. It was, but yet it's so, not only it's funny, but it's also very, I don't know, for me, it drew me in, but I'm kind of drawn to farm animal stuff. I have like
I think a lot of people like, you know, roosters.
Yeah. And, I have this collection of
Cubans.
Pigs, that's my thing. I have all these.
Oh, me too.
Pigs.
I love pigs and cocks.
Yes.
I think it's also a very Cuban thing, very Latin American.
Yeah.
And I think Portuguese people are also very into roosters as well.
Yeah.
But my entire family, we all have rooster paintings, rooster sculptures, rooster figurines. I've always really loved the rooster. And for my dad's birthday about 4 years ago, I wanted to paint a rooster for him. And then I thought, what if I make the crest of the rooster the island of Cuba?
Oh, wow.
And so that has become my signature piece, which I've painted about 5 or 6 times now.
Awesome.
And I'm actually getting ready to do one, like an alfresco on the wall in my living room, like a huge version of one of those.
That's cool.
We're all going to Cuba for the first time in April, my parents and my siblings. So, that's very exciting. From doing that image, I sort of moved to the rooster smoking a cigar, and I have a few of those too.
I just get more phallic
as I go.
Yeah, well, hello, you're a gay man, so here we go, right?
Yeah.
We always have to bring the phallic in some way. I mean, you know, if I don't get to say cock at least once in every show in some way, then this isn't the Coming Out Lounge. I feel like I've let my listeners down if they don't hear me say cock or penis or vagina or something. So.
Right.
So now I just got it out of the way, so now I can go, okay, we have achieved what we came here to achieve. So what's next for you, man? You're going to paint the painting in your living room, but what's next professionally? Any big shows? Any new stuff coming up?
Well, right. I have an episode of Baby Daddy coming out, I think, in January, February. It's a really fun role. I play a gynecologist with no filter. So she comes to me and, you know, she comes to get a sonogram. Uh-huh. And I'm like, well, you can say goodbye to this body and, you know, things like
right,
that.
Right.
Like, this is going to be huge. And, you know, like, just like really awful things. It was a lot of fun and those people are great. And then I'm also working on Colony. I have a recurring role on there. You know, that's a show about alien invasion on USA.
Right. Yeah, that's great, man.
And that's coming out next year also. And hopefully there will be more episodes of that to shoot. And that's it, you know, auditioning. I'm working on a painting commission now for a client, and the voiceover stuff continues. The most immediate thing is my trip to Miami to see my family. I leave on Saturday, and Cubans celebrate Christmas Eve, Noche Buena.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I get to Miami on Saturday around 6, and then I'm going to a friend's house, my sister's neighbor, and I'm going to get into a Santa Claus suit. And then I'm going to go to the party, and they don't know that I'm coming is the whole thing.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah, I was supposed to go to my boyfriend's house for Christmas, but we broke up.
So maybe we'll have my family and I'm going to surprise them. Well, maybe we'll have you come back on and we'll do something around Valentine's Day of how you go through the breakups and all that stuff in the Hollywood lifestyle, because I think it's so interesting, again, that people think, oh my God, celebrities, they must have it so much easier. No, they go through the same stuff too. So get over it and realize we're all human and we're all going to have the same emotions, and it just, some of these people, their stuff plays out in front of the whole damn world. Well, hey, man, I just want to tell you, I'm so excited we had this conversation. I'm going to, since I do have your email, I will send you some pictures of my private little pig collection so we can compare pigs.
Yes.
But before we wrap it up here, man, one of the things I always ask each guest is if you could leave some words of wisdom for someone who's just beginning their journey, or maybe they're partially through the journey of coming out, what would you love to say to those that are listening?
Somebody who's going through the journey of coming out.
Yeah.
Well, and it was a safe environment for them to do so. Look, what I would say to anybody is you're amazing. Mm-hmm. Every single person is amazing and wonderful and worthy and deserving of happiness. Mm-hmm. So find that happiness. And if that includes coming out and facing some demons and fighting them, then do it and then move on. But move out of that place of second guessing and move towards the happiness that is your right. Because life is supposed to be fun.
Yes. Fun and happy.
Fun and happy. Yeah. So get through it safest, best way you know how. But strive for the happiness.
Oh, awesome.
Because that's when the fun begins.
Exactly.
That's when life gets good.
Yes. Because you can't be miserable and have fun. The two don't go together. You can't be miserable and be happy. The yin and yangs. And
you can't get happy from a miserable place.
No.
You have to have the dream of happiness first.
Absolutely.
So you have to, happiness begins in the misery.
Yes.
Happiness begins with the dream of happiness wherever you are. And then once that dream is possible, then you're on the road. You know, I remember my dad, who's very depressed for a while, and he's like, I just can't, no matter what I do. And I just asked him, I said, Dad, do you think it's possible for you to be happy again? Do you think it's possible?
Mm-hmm.
And he thought about it, and later, and you know, that conversation ended, and later on, he texted me or called me or whatever, and he was like, you know what? I feel like I'm on my way to happiness, or just on my way to recovery, mm-hmm. because of what you said when you asked me that question, do I think it's possible? And I thought, yes, it is possible. And the minute I started thinking it was possible, then ideas on how to make it possible began to come. So that's what I'm saying. You know, he was still depressed. He was still sad. But the dream, the beginning, the kernel, the idea has to be born from there. Mm.
You just proved beyond a shadow of a doubt to me, who's a life coach, that you have definitely been doing this work on diving deep into your own spirituality.
Because, for so many years.
Well, and but those are the, you know, that's the thing people say, well, how do I figure this stuff out? I said, you got to learn to ask yourself the deep questions. And that's one of them. Do you really believe it's possible to be happy?
Mm-hmm. And you read know? As a man thinketh. That was one of the things that, it was, there was an excerpt of it in a men's health magazine on the very, very edge of one of the pages. It was like a blip. And I was in the bathroom at a friend's house. And from that experience, you know, I just thought, wow, this is really like inspiring. And I saw where it came from. It's an excerpt from a book called As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. And I bought the book. It is the size of a pamphlet, people. It's yes. a free download and is so, so thin. But I have marked up that book so much over the years, and I actually have a tattoo on my arm from one of the phrases from that book, because it's all about empowering yourself, and it's all about figuring out the way you think and realizing that your thinking leads to actions which yes. lead to your circumstances.
Exactly.
So I love that book.
Awesome. So now we'll put that on the show page too. So there's a link to where you can download. I love that book too. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and I would buy it because you're going to want to underline yeah, it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So
I have underlined it so many times that I have like the date when I underline uh-huh. that particular thing as if it were more important that way. But you know, for the history of me.
That's so awesome. Well, you know what, Val? It has just been, I just love this conversation. It just,
me too, man.
It's just been great. And seriously, I would love to have you back another time, and maybe we'll do something around gay men and their bullshit. I think that would be a really fun conversation too, of really how to dive in and embrace yourself and love yourself and do those things that scare the crap out of you when you know you want to approach that guy and say something to him. It's all just, it's yeah. all about loving and trusting and being yourselves. I can tell you are truly being that guy. So thanks for being an inspiration today on the show for us. I so appreciate you, man.
My pleasure. And if you know any single bears, send them my way.
Oh, well, maybe let me see if I can make myself available then. So.
I'm not here to break up anybody.
No. Well, you heard it there, guys. There you go. He's looking for a single bear. So line him up and I'll take my cut for being the matchmaker. So there we go, man. So.
Great.
All right, brother. Have a wonderful holiday. And thanks again so much for being on the show.
All right, man. You too. Have a happy holiday.
Hey, closet dwellers and coming out lounge listeners. I wanted to ask you a question. If you could take stress out of your journey, be more content in who you are, and find ways to do some of the most difficult things that you need to do as you come through the closet doors, would you do it? I bet the answer is yes. Why do I know this? Because I have been getting requests from listeners and clients or prospective clients about finding ways to just address certain things in their coming out journey. Some people don't want to work for a long time, and I totally get that. And that's why I've designed some brand new coming out coaching one-on-one sessions. These are very focused, topic-specific sessions. For example, maybe you're looking at coming out midlife and how do you do it? Could be that you're already out, but you're not completely out and you want to talk about how do I do this and come out at work. Could be that you're having trouble even accepting yourself as a gay person. And might there be a possibility that you're really struggling with your sexuality and your religion? Depending on what you're looking for, I've designed 9 powerful, highly focused one-on-one laser coaching sessions that you can choose from. Each session goes for 90 minutes. We stay specifically focused on the topic at hand. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So now that you've heard about this, how would you like to go check them out? Well, here's how you do this. Go to thecomingoutcoach.com. On that page, you can scroll down. You'll see stuff for the book and for some other offerings, but then you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button, and it will take you to a page that describes each of the 9 offerings that I have. If you happen to be listening to the podcast right now, just look over to the right-hand side of the show page, and you'll see one-on-one coaching sessions right there.
Again, just click on that button and go check out these new offerings. So what do you think? Isn't it about time that you stepped out, you stepped up, and you stepped into resolving whatever the biggest issue is in your coming out journey? I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach, and I can't wait to work with you one-on-one.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.